Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Envision Podcast. My name is Karthik Kannan and I am your host for today's episode. On this podcast, we bring together people who have had a positive impact on the blind visually impaired community from across the world and share their stories with you. Our guest for today is Robin Christopherson. Robin is the head of digital inclusion at Accessibility Net and is part of the globally acclaimed accessibility and tech team there. He's spoken at numerous events in recent years and also hosts the awesome technology podcast called Dot to Dot. Come join us as we dive into how Robin got started with technology and where he thinks accessibility tech is heading as a whole. So Robin, thank you for joining us in today's episode.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Really looking forward to a chat.
We always get started with these podcasts asking our guests a little bit about their background and how they got started and what events led them to be the person they are today. So could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm blind. I had some vision earlier on and it just gradually went. Probably no useful vision in my mid-20s and I'm twice that age now. But I went to a normal school, struggled at university. I did engineering, which was probably a mistake, but you know, I had a chat with the careers person at school before I chose, and she said, you know, even though it's going to be hard with the vision that you'll have, do what you want to do, because then you can always retrain later. And, you know, if you don't, then you might always think, well, you know, what if kind of thing. So, yeah, I did engineering, and then it did prove to be really, really hard. Afterwards, I worked for nearly 2 years for the RNIB, the Royal National Institute for the Blind, here in the UK, and that came about by going on a course for IT, to learn IT, because at university I had a talking laptop. It was a DOS-based laptop, an old Toshiba, you know, with the Apollo synthesizer. I don't know if people are aware of that, but, you know, I had limited tech knowledge, and that was a really useful and very instructive 13 weeks. And afterwards, I was really lucky because they offered me a job as an IT instructor. So then I stayed on for a couple of years working for the RNIB. And after that, then in 1996, this was AbilityNet. Well, actually, its precursor, called the Computability Center, which was actually kind of the special needs arm of IBM. I saw an advert there, so I went to work for them. And the Computability Center merged with another charity to do with disability and technology here in the UK. And the two of them became AbilityNet in 1998. So I've been working for AbilityNet and its precursor for 25 years now. And it's brilliant. It's like being paid to play. But if I hadn't heard about the vacancy at AbilityNet, you know, I don't know what my career would have been. The RNIB here in the UK is struggling financially. And, you know, there are lots of people who have been laid off at the RNIB. And, you know, going pan-disability was just so brilliant, working for a charity that was across all disabilities, because I think it's really important to know, firstly, about the power of technology and its potential to, you know, change people's lives, but also how all-embracing it is from an impairment point of view. So it was brilliant that I learned about all the tech for visually, you know, people with a vision impairment, but we don't all fit into neat boxes. And some, you know, someone with a vision impairment, for example, might get RSI or, you know, back pain or a hearing impairment, which is what I am faced with at the moment. My kids tease me a lot about not being able to hear particularly high-pitched noises. So I'm, you know, looking at headphone accommodations, those settings in iOS, for example, and they have literally changed my 50-year-old hearing back into like a 15-year-old's hearing, which is absolutely brilliant. I would recommend everybody of a certain age to go and look in those, particularly if you use an app to do a free hearing test, which can then create what's called an audiogram. And that audiogram gets saved to the health app in iOS. And then you can point the headphone accommodations in the accessibility settings at that audiogram, and then you get like a tailor-made EQ, which is absolutely brilliant. I've gone off topic here, but anyway, technology has played a massive part in my life, my career, and I've just felt really fortunate to be able to, what's felt like being paid to play for the last 25 years, and helping other people make sure that they have the right solutions and that websites and apps with the companies that we work with are inclusive too.
I 100% agree, and I also believe that the best jobs in the world are where you get paid to play with the cool tech and have an impact on people through that. So my next question is about what accessibility means to you. And because I've seen, or when I look at your career, it's you've been involved with accessibility since the very beginning of what, the accessibility technology space. So I want to understand, you know, how it's evolved and what accessibility means to you.
Well, it's changed, like you say. Originally, accessibility meant to me, you know, that it opened doors. There was specialist technology, namely or primarily screen reading software, because I can't see. but also the fact that, you know, you could use a flatbed scanner to scan in print documentation, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's always been that kind of accessible element to technology, which has meant that I've been able to participate. I've been able to join the party. And accessibility has always been, you know, historically a specialist area, you know, for disabled people. There would be specialist developers, vendors, and assistive technology was usually pretty pricey and not updated, or not potentially, you know, using the very latest cutting edge technologies. And that's understandable. You know, these are small, relatively small organizations that need to make a living and haven't got massive R&D budgets or departments. So, yeah, I mean, that was accessibility, wasn't it? It was, you know, assistive technology for disabled people. But I certainly, in the last 10 or 15 years, and absolutely accelerated by the advent of mobile, accessibility now, for me, I would argue, is a thoroughly mainstream requirement. With mobile in particular, and, you know, we're definitely living in a mobile-first world, stats show that, on average, 60%+ of traffic on any given day to any given website is from mobile. And that's websites. So obviously there are apps as well that are mobile too. So we're living in a mobile first world, and everybody who hasn't got an impairment is temporarily impaired by computing on the edge, extreme computing. You know, you're not now dealing with a desktop where you can pick the exact keyboard you like, the exact mouse or trackball or trackpad or whatever, a nice big screen so you can easily see it. You know, if the sun's too bright, close the blinds or whatever. You've got a very controlled environment there. When you move over to mobile, you know, you're juggling your phone one-handed, small sheet of shiny glass on a sunny day, bumpy bus or car, noisy cafe. I could go on and on and on. So every single person that is using a mobile phone is sliding up and down that spectrum of impairment minute by minute, really. So, and that really resonates, that message, with our customers who often need still to make the case internally to sign off budget for changes to accessibility, or, you know, heightening the prioritization of accessibility within their teams, etc., etc. And we could talk about, you know, what accessibility should look like in a mature organization, you know, what kind of things should be in place. But yeah, we certainly, AbilityNet have seen a shift from people coming to us, having a certain project in mind, us doing that. They come back, you know, 8 months later or 18 months later, and we've got another project here, and it's obvious that there hasn't been any learning curve or transfer of knowledge in the meantime. They, you know, they're back to square one, really. They haven't changed their processes or anything like that. So yeah, it's completely changed now to one where we want to transfer our expertise into those organizations so that they get better and better, their systems, their processes, their tools. their component libraries, etc., so they can, you know, do it themselves. But yeah, this is really a massive shift that we've seen over the last sort of 5-10 years in how our clients view accessibility. And I think it's largely due to the fact that, you know, diversity is a really hot topic at the moment. You know, there's this kind of LGBTQ and BAME and everything sort of party that everyone's taking part in. And, you know, organizations like the Valuable 500 are doing their best to make sure that disability isn't like the forgotten person in the party. And so there's a big recognition that disability is a valuable component to bring to diversity, to teams that are creating products, to customers that can test your products for you, etc. And if you make them inclusive for those customers, for and for your employees, then they're actually going to be easier to use for everybody, because we're all computing on the edge.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Sorry to interrupt you, because I just the last statement that you made really struck a chord with me, because from our experience working on Envision, we've seen that when we make a product or a tool or a service accessible for people who are blind or visually impaired, it also becomes easier for people without disabilities to use them as well, right? When we put specific focus on making, for example, our website easier to navigate or our copy easier to understand, it helps people who are, you know, sighted as well to be able to browse through the website more easier, to be able to navigate more easier. So I think working on accessibility and building a more inclusive, accessible product or service is something that can impact your entire user base. So I think developers and companies should put more effort into making their products accessible out of the box.
If people are in any doubt, there's no friction, there's no conflict between accessibility and good design. It will make it better for every single user. Because if you think about it, if you make it usable for someone who has got increased needs, you know, a literacy difficulty, a learning difficulty, a low vision, whatever it might be, it's going to make it extremely usable for people that haven't. And when they're in those environments where suddenly there is, you know, really bright day or, you know, very noisy, then they're going to be able to use it, whereas before they might not be able to at all. So it really does help. The RNIB did some really good research a while ago, and they got a bunch of disabled users to look at a range of websites, and the sites that were at least single A compliant in WCAG, I'm sure we all kind of know what the guidelines are, they obviously found them easier to use. But the real interesting takeaway was they had a control group of able-bodied testers without any disability at all who looked at the same websites, did the same tasks, and they also found that the sites that met at least single A, they were able to use them much more easily. On average, they performed the tasks 35% more quickly on sites that were minimum accessible. So for every single user, like you say, you get this usability bonus, and that was quantified at 35%. In that study. So yeah, this is the time where we should be thinking about accessibility as being table stakes. You know, every single product and service should be inclusive just to make it fit for purpose in this extreme, you know, computing age. And so that's the message we're trying to get across to organizations. And to that end, inclusive design should be the phrase that we're talking about, because it is accessibility, and it's the WCAG guidelines, or it's the smartphone guidelines, you know, whatever the relevant platform is. But at the end of the day, it's going to benefit everybody. And then it stops being a bolt-on kind of niche consideration, and it should be given the prioritization and the resources, etc., that it deserves, because it will benefit everyone.
No, completely agree with what you're saying. And I strongly believe that, like I mentioned earlier as well, that when we see that making products accessible helps not just people who are disabled or people who have, like, you know, elevated needs, like you mentioned, but everybody, I think it's something that we all should adopt as developers, as companies, so that it becomes a much more inclusive environment for people wanting to use today's technology products. I also want to dial back the conversation just a little bit, because I know there are a lot of young people listening on this podcast. There are people who are probably getting into the accessibility space, just like I am right now. And we'd like to know what it was like in the pre-mobile era. You know, we all know about screen readers and voiceover and talkback, and it all seems like a new concept to us. But I'm pretty sure it has a long, you know, I would say history of evolution, right? It's been evolving for so many decades. And I'd like to know from your perspective as someone who's been around for so long in this space, could you talk to us a little bit about how, you know, accessibility technology has evolved, how stuff like screen readers have evolved since the beginning?
Yeah, so DOS with a DOS screen reader was pretty viable and quite simple. You know, WordPerfect 5.1 was the DOS-based word processor that everyone was using. So we were able to use, in quotes, mainstream word processor. We had various other programs, as they were called then, not applications. And then in the 90s, the internet came along, and it was when Windows 3.11 came along that there was the viability for a screen reader, and JAWS for Windows came along. And so I had my first taste of using Windows, and that is a much more complicated environment, as people know. But still, the web, I was using, in effect, a DOS, a kind of a text-only web browser called Webby, WebIE, and it was really, really basic. And these were the days when organizations who wanted to accommodate blind people would create a completely separate text-only version of the website, and it would have a link at the top saying text-only, and you'd click on that and you'd get a much simpler version of the website that was never updated as much as the other one, and, you know, half the stuff in the main site wasn't available. So it was a real segregation thing, where as now we know that inclusive design applies to web as well. You know, it can really be an inclusive experience with the one website. It can respond to different screen sizes. It can be compatible with different assistive technologies and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I was very specialist in those days. You know, now you can use Narrator. That's really a very viable screen reader. But because I've grown up with JAWS and it has a lot of power features, you know, I am still specialist there. But, you know, on my phone, I've not, you know, I'm using VoiceOver. I'm using mostly mainstream apps. And apart from a few, like Seeing AI, for example, on iOS, I'm able to be fully mainstream. And all of that replaces a whole backpack full of equipment. I used to have a talking note taker that was specialist, talking MP3 player and book, you know, Daisy book player, talking barcode scanner, talking GPS, Trekker Breeze, etc. And this was about £5,000 worth of equipment. And every single one had its own different, you know, charging brick and cable and stuff like that, and were in varying degrees of out of dateness and stuff like that. All of that's gone. I can go somewhere with just my phone now. If I had a pair of Envision glasses, hint, hint, then I would be able to just go somewhere with my, you know, with a wearable that would have all of that power in there, or much of what I needed to do on a daily basis, in a form factor that had, you know, had optimized the use of the sensors that I use every day on my phone in a way that would make that even more useful, etc. And it's worth saying that all of the technologies in Envision AI Glass, for example, you know, OCR, image recognition, text-to-speech recognition, speech synthesis, all of these things are completely mainstream now. You know, they are used every single day by people in a range of, you know, either education, entertainment, or business contexts, but they all originated as, you know, trying to solve a solution for people with a disability. So, you know, it kind of cuts both ways.
Yep, no, that makes sense. And for me, one of the things that I was thinking about the other day was closed captions, right? Closed captions started off as a tool to help people who are hard of hearing to be able to follow through a video or a movie or any visual medium much more easily. And I've seen that closed captions have also become a more mainstream thing, right? So when I first started watching, you know, movies, American movies or British movies, I used to use, you know, closed captions to help me understand the accent better. So that's one really good example of a tech that started, you know, as a fairly niche thing for people with disabilities, but then it has a ripple effect on the rest of the society as well. And it's not just me. There's so many people out there who use closed captions for videos, during lectures, to be able to understand them better. And so I think that stuff has been really interesting to talk about. And I want to take you a little forward in time now. And we're going to the launch of VoiceOver on the iPhone 3G. So could you talk to us about that day when you first came to know about, you know, VoiceOver on the new iPhone, and how did you really adapt yourself to that technology?
Well, I mean, I was a little bit late to the party. I wasn't aware about, you know, these 36 seconds that changed the world. This was how long it took Phil Schiller to introduce VoiceOver. So I didn't come to the party until iPhone 4 the year later. I think it first came out on the 3DS. And I was using a Nokia 6600, I think it was, with Torx, which, you know, that cost as much as the phone. And I was using apps like Wayfinder, without an E on the end, DR on the end. And Wayfinder was a kind of a talking sat-nav app for Symbian, which was the operating system for Nokia phones. So I was feeling pretty cool. I was feeling pretty tech, you know, being a bit up to date with the kind of, so I could do texts and obviously no email and stuff like that and very basic web browsing. But yeah, then I don't know why I was unaware or kind of incentivized to look into it a little bit sooner, but with the iPhone 4, maybe it was a contract thing, can't remember. But I thought, this is the future, this is the way it's going. Typing on a touchscreen keyboard, it was very disturbing and still is to a certain extent. But dictation is absolutely brilliant. I know a lot of people say that dictation is problematic. For me, I don't know if it's my pronunciation, but I never ever have to I never have to correct text that I dictate unless it's dictating some compound word that, you know, you have to put together like tech talk without a space or something. So, it was very exciting and really, you know, a revelation to be able to use all the built-in apps from day one. They were accessible, and to be able to play with a load of third-party apps, most of which were accessible as well. And as a blind person, to be using the same as everybody else. Because, I mean, I was using a Nokia, but I wasn't using it in the same way. I had to buy this extra thing, and it only worked on certain parts of the phone. And, you know, so I felt like I had this kind of sticking plaster on, a partial experience. But with iPhone and iOS, you felt like you were doing what everybody else was doing, which was obviously, you know, very, very exciting when it comes to such an iconic product as Apple.
So we spoke about accessibility tech in the past, you know, the early days, I would say, not the past. And, you know, accessibility tech of the present, stuff like screen readers on smartphones and so on. And obviously, I want to know what your perception is, or what do you think is going to be the accessibility tech of the future? What kind of technologies are we missing today that we could see or we should see in the future?
I think it's going to be more about innovative use of technologies that are maturing very rapidly at the moment. And Envision AI is a perfect example of that, where, you know, I'm sure you haven't had to reinvent the wheel when it comes to the smarts that you use around the, you know, the AI components. Microsoft in particular have got a really robust and comprehensive range of APIs, their cognitive services APIs, that any developer, anyone listening here who wants to develop their first iOS app, for example, or Android app, can tie into those APIs and get a lot of smarts free out of the box. And they, you know, can do really imaginative things with that. So I think that's the space where we're going to see a lot of exciting innovation. Your product, you know, is new to the game, but it brings together all of those kind of cutting edge elements to meet a need that is only just beginning to be met now. And we've got LiDAR on the new iPhones, which instantly was leveraged by, you know, third-party apps, etc. So I think there's going to be a lot of future there in not just AI, but the applications of it to, you know, the disability world, for example, but also more sensors coming out that will tie into the use of AI. I'm obviously also, you know, very excited about autonomous vehicles, that as a blind person, I may be able to hail a very affordable ride in the future. And I could easily have said, you know, own my own car. But I actually think that the idea of car ownership is going to feel really antiquated soon. You know, to have a car that you've paid, you know, tens of thousands of pounds for or whatever, and it's, you know, 95% of the time your car is sitting somewhere taking up space and depreciating in value and potentially rusting or whatever. So you know, the idea of owning a car will just seem crazy. You know, it'll seem ridiculous when you can hail a car, an autonomous ride of any shape or form. You could ask for a single seater one, you could ask for a 12-seater one, and there'd be so many of them on the streets that, you know, it would be there within 7.5 minutes or something. If you wanted a really cost-effective ride, you could pick the option where you are happy to share the ride with someone else. And the sheer volume of vehicles on the streets and the algorithms that kind of tie together different, you know, people's journey routes would mean that you'd still be taken door to door, but you would have shared it with a number of other people, and you'd have all shared the cost of the ride. So there's going to be so much innovation there, and there's going to be direct applications for people with disabilities. So I'm really excited about what that's going to look like in the future as well.
No, I'm definitely just as excited for that kind of a future, right? Where there is AI or similar technologies assisting us and helping make our products and services and the tools that we use radically more inclusive and accessible than what it is today. We've been talking, Robin, a lot about, you know, technology and all those things, but I want to talk a little bit about the humans who build the technology, right? I've seen that amongst developers or people who are building, you know, technology products today, there's not a lot of awareness about accessibility. And when they start out to build a product or when they start out to design a product, accessibility is always a nice to have for a lot of products that we use. A lot of app developers consider it that way. So if you want to talk to those developers, if you want to, you know, give them a little piece of advice on how they can get started into accessibility, that would be really helpful. Because for a lot of these developers, it's not really the code or the technology part that with regards to accessibility that is clueless for them. They're not really sure as to how to approach accessibility in the first place and how they can actually get started with making their apps or their services or their products more accessible.
I think that obviously there's the kind of individual who cares about it, and they can go and look for the options within Xcode or whatever the equivalent dev platform is for Android, because there are very mature accessibility checking tools, particularly in Xcode. That's been updated recently, and the accessibility inspector is really very good. So yeah, just kind of being passionate about it, trying out the different, you know, accessibility settings on the device or in emulation, I think is really important. But I would also like to see a push environment rather, because that's a pull environment. You have to go and check yourself. You have to know about it. You have to find out about it. I want Apple to push that to developers and, you know, Google to push it through Android to make sure that it's front and center for people. Obviously, it's just one of many things that they're going to have to test for. But, you know, a bit like how Microsoft surfaces the spell checker in Word. You know, that's kind of on by default if you send an email in Outlook, for example. And most people wouldn't consider sending a Word document that is of any importance to somebody without having run the spell checker over it. So it would be great if that, you know, if they could surface the brilliant accessibility checking functions in Office, say, much higher up, you know, put it as a top ribbon item that people can hide again if they want to, but, you know, at least make people aware that it's there, embed it into the spell checker so that it also can flag about unlabeled images and stuff, you know, just kind of put it in people's faces. So I'd like them to do that in the developer side of things as well, make people aware, you know, gently hold their hand through the steps that they need to go through to make sure that they've done the basics. And then on the other side of things, you know, AI plays a part in the OS as well to kind of help try and decide what unlabeled images are and things, particularly in social media where you can't expect everyone that posts an image to have described it as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's only when you hear about it and feel like it's something that you want to engage with that you can go out and sort of start to experiment and start on that journey. But it would be great if it was really encouraged and ideally would be part of the app sign-off process verification. So yep. That would be great if before it got allowed in the App Store, those basic checks were done as well.
Yep. And I have to say the number one best resource for me to learn more about accessibility, for me to get in touch with users in the community who could help us test out accessibility within the app or give us generally their ideas on improving the design. I think online communities have been the best place for that. People have been super warm in so many different communities like AppleWiz and you know, Blind Android Users Group. They've been so forthcoming with the feedback. They've been very patient with the bugs. So I always believe that whenever you want to go out and really start building something for the blind and visually impaired community, online, you know, communities, forums, they are the best place to get started, you know, and there's some absolutely amazing resources out there by blind and visually impaired developers giving feedback on how to improve apps with, you know, that are being built for this particular market. And I think generally there's been a lot of awareness in these forums as well being raised for products. I think any aspiring developer, product designer who really wants to build more accessible tools, I think the first place they could start off is by trying to look at what online communities are there for that particular disability, trying to have an open conversation with people from those communities and really factoring in their feedback during the product development process.
Oh, there are loads of brilliant resources out there. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. So, before we end the show, I wanted to ask you, Robin, is there, you know, anything that you'd like to share with our audience? Is there anything that you're working on right now? Any content that you're putting out regularly that you would like to share with our audience?
Yeah, sure. So I work for AbilityNet, as I've mentioned. That's all one word. And if you go to abilitynet.org.uk, then you can see all of the brilliant work that we do there. If you go to /webinars, then you'll see that we're very active in that space as well. I interviewed Sarah Herlinger, head of accessibility. That's not her job title. It's something a lot more complicated than that, but that's basically what she is at Apple. So there's brilliant content there. Go to /webinars and you can watch those. I do a number of podcasts. I do the daily podcast called Dot to Dot, three words, and that's all about the Echo. We do a different skill demo or bit of built-in functionality demo. There's always a demo each day in about 5 minutes, and we're up to episode nearly 1500, 1480 or something, and we've never missed a day. So check out Dot to Dot. I do a weekly show about the Echo as well with a lot more chat called The Echo Show with a brilliant guy called Sean Preece. I do a weekly podcast called Tech Talk, two words, from the RNIB, with another brilliant guy, Stephen Scott, and another co-host, Tim Schwartz. That's a brilliant show as well. There's a vision impairment angle to that one. There isn't to the other two. Smart speakers can be for everyone. And I should also say that the Echo Show, even though that's what it's called, isn't just about the ones with screens. It's just a show about the Echo. And finally, I do a fortnightly podcast called Maccessibility, which is accessibility with an M at the beginning. And that's obviously about Apple products primarily. So check out all of those podcasts. And I also write a lot of articles and things and do a lot of public speaking, details of which you can find out on the AbilityNet website.
You are definitely a very, very prolific person, Robin. So thank you for joining us today. It was really a pleasure having you on the podcast, sharing with us your thoughts about accessibility, the past, the present, and where it's going in the future, and also about a little bit about, you know, how we all as developers, inventors, improve the accessibility of the products that we're using. I'm sure the audience listening to this podcast has a lot to take away and will also definitely check out your podcasts or your work, and we're going to link them in the description of the podcast itself. So once again, thank you for taking out the time, Robin, and good luck with everything.
Brilliant. Thank you, Karthik, and best of luck with the service, with the nice, shiny new product. Can't wait to have a go on it. And best of luck with the webcast as well.
And to all our listeners, thank you for listening in on today's episode with Robin Christopherson. I hope that it was inspirational, it was informative for you as well. We're going to be back with another episode very, very soon, so stay tuned for that. And thank you once again.